The world is full of broken cities. Forsaken ruins and shattered buildings are everywhere. Just take a look at the BBC website sometime if you have time. Take yourself on a world tour and look at Syria, Kiev. Look at Maiduguri in the north of Nigeria, attacked, laid low this past week. We know what it looks like. We can imagine what it feels like, and when we see it, we never, ever want to live there. When you see those fire-scorched buildings, derelict warehouses, mountainous piles of rubble, we know, don't we, immediately, that is not a place to visit. We want the opposite. Isaiah has been giving us the Lonely Planet guide to broken cities. Babylon, the fallen city. Egypt, with cities in civil war and drought, with the Nile running dry. Remember Tyre, the bankrupt city? Ephraim, the deserted city? Moab, the trampled city? Remember the last few weeks? The whole point is to picture one day the whole world as a silent city. Isaiah's point is that his writing is meant to be like flashing up in our mind those images from the BBC website, so that in all those places we never ever want to go and live there. He wants us to flee the kingdoms of the world and to shun the one great city of the world, and instead Isaiah wants us to live here in God's city. What we read this morning, chapter 26, is a picture of somewhere to live, which really is a picture of our ultimate home. It's what will one day become a true and perfect and final reality, but which we can enter now already by faith, as we trust in God. And the most wonderful thing about this city, compared to all the other cities, is, well, what would you say? Verse 1. In that day, this song will be sung in the land of Judah. We have a strong city. God makes salvation its walls and ramparts. Have you ever had that kind of dream where you're being chased? Somebody is after you. Perhaps your memory of the nightmare is only very, very short, but it makes you wake. You have a recollection of being pursued, hunted, under threat. And the moment comes when you're awake and rich relief floods over your sweating body. There is nobody standing at the foot of your bed. There is no one in your house. There is no one chasing you. Where you are is safe, secure. Some of us in life feel vulnerable and we want to be protected and made to feel safe. We fear being unloved or left alone. We fear that our job is not safe, or the economy is not safe, or even our country is not safe. Others of us fear no one or nothing. The problems of the world always happen to someone else, not us. Life stretches ahead of us in a carefree way. Even if actually we're like that, it's only because we feel safe that we're carefree. The most wonderful thing about this city is that it is strong and safe. We have a strong city. Life with God is safe life. Secure life, rescued life. And this chapter is all about the characteristics of city living. One day, chapter 25 that we looked at last week, one day city living is going to include a majestic banquet, the best you've ever seen or eaten from. Chapter 26 today, one day city living is going to include a song about what life in that city is like. This is an invitation, isn't it, to enter the city. You see it in verse 2, open the gates. So here this morning is what defines life in the city. Here are the marks of the citizens of the city. Here's what city living is like within these walls. Belonging to God, safe in the palm of His hand, we do four things. We're going to spend most of our time on the first one because I think it's the key one. It's the key to all the others, but they're all important for us. Here's the first one that we do. In city life, we trust in God's strength. We trust in God's strength. Verses 3 and 4 are beautiful, aren't they? You will keep in perfect peace him whose mind is steadfast because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever. For the Lord is the rock eternal. When you trust in this Lord, this God, look what happens to you. God keeps us in perfect peace because our minds are steadfast. And I imagine if we're honest, don't we want to take a long, hard look at verses like this and say that, of course, perfect peace is what we all long for and want, but for us as believers inside the city, it seems to be so unobtainable. Stop and look at the circumstances of your life. Turmoil and heartache and difficulty. We go to bed stressed, wake up heavy-hearted. A steadfast mind seems to be the one thing we don't possess. The one of sustained frame of mind. That's what it's saying. That's who God keeps and holds and who knows peace. A sustained frame of mind. If your frame of mind is anything like mine, what would you replace sustained with? Anxious? Fearful? Self-absorbed? Carefree? Isaiah is saying that once you go in the gates of this city, there is a way of relating to God which can seep deep down into your heart and into your mind, which then trickles out through your hands and feet, your legs, so that you live and walk and wait in this world in a way which shows that your trust is in God. Now, I want that. One day we're going to sing about it forever. And I hope you do too, I want to experience it now. This kind of life-transforming trust. How do we do it? How do we move towards what Isaiah is talking about here? Do you remember the story? I know I've told you this before, I couldn't remember when, but I've used it. But you may remember the story about a man in America crossing a frozen river on a winter's day. And as he stood at the river's edge, he did not know how thick the ice was. But he had to cross, and so he inched along on all fours, gingerly feeling his way forward. And then he heard a thundering noise behind him when he'd got halfway across. He looked back to see someone else crossing the river, but driving a wagon and horses, thundering past him across the river. That man was a local. He knew how thick the ice was. He knew that this time of year, after that kind of weather, the ice is always several feet deep. And he placed all his weight on it. He knew it would carry him safely through. If you know the strength of what you're trusting, you can give yourself to it completely. You cannot give yourself to something or someone completely unless you know their strength. That's what Isaiah is saying to us. Look at who you're trusting. Take your eyes off your own trust and look at who you're trusting. Verse 4. The Lord is the rock eternal. Ice is strong. It can be deep and thick, but it is not as solid as rock. That new university library, I used to watch them build it. And for that massive glass and concrete structure that's standing there now, they sank into the ground, concrete pylons almost as high as the building itself, deep beneath the ground. And that glass structure now stands there every single day, trusting the rock underneath it. Every time I sit on the seventh floor, I trust those deep pylons that I no longer see. When you enter Zion, God's city, and when He calls you to come and live with Him, you are trusting in a rock, an eternal rock, the strongest person there ever was. Someone who is going nowhere, absolutely nowhere. Do you see the strength of the one you've given yourself to in all your weakness? Do you see what it means? Some of us have been doing Judges, haven't we, in house groups. And in our study this past week, we spent a bit of time discussing this wonderful phrase from Tim Keller's notes. I think I tended to give Tim Keller's answers more than anything else. But here's a wonderful phrase that he says. What difference would it make to my life if I really believed God was completely committed to me to love me and bless me and work what is best for me? In what way would I live more radically or restfully? What difference would it make if I really believed God was completely committed to work what is best for me? What difference would it make if I really believed He was a rock? If we believe God is for us and holding us, doesn't it mean that all the flimsy, shaking, turbulent times of my life are resting on strong, firm, unshakable goodness and grace? And that, knowing who we rest on, that is what makes us steadfast. I was just reading this week about David Moyes, who's the new Manchester United football manager, having not the best season, inheriting one of the best football, most successful football clubs in the world. And this article was all about the problems he's facing in his first season. Interestingly, the article was by his sports psychologist, a man who knows him intimately. And he said this: at times like this, you need leaders to be strong, to stand up and be counted. Moyes must be absolutely clear that no matter what kinks appear, he is not going to be diverted from his path. These situations become a real test of leadership, character and faith in where you think you're going. You cannot run big organizations and change direction every 5 minutes. People don't respond well to it. People respond to certainty. Certainty is what makes you steadfast. We all respond well to certainty, don't we? We like knowing where we are. And Isaiah says you cannot get more certain than a rock. It's going nowhere. And the process of becoming steadfast comes about through learning to put all our investments in one place. Put all your eggs in one basket. Look to God. Tie yourself to Him every single time. A life of Christian character and depth of maturity comes about through this, a long, deep process of unselfing. An increased awareness and an increased devotion to somebody else, somebody higher than me, more authoritative than me, more good than me, stronger than me. Unselfing myself, putting myself on Him. And do you know, if this morning we're looking at our own lives, looking at our own circumstances, and finding them so difficult and painful that real trust in God, no matter how much we seem to be trying it, real trust in God seems to be eluding our grasp. We think we're trusting Him, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. Then I think Isaiah keeps gently prodding us in a surprising direction here. Look at verse 5. I think he would say to us in that circumstance, humble yourself. See what he says? He humbles those who dwell on high. He lays the lofty city low. He levels it to the ground and casts it down to the dust. Let God humble you. God is the one who's one day going to lay low in the dust all the pride of the fallen city of the world. And I think Isaiah is showing that when you are humble now, when you lay low now, when you are unselfing yourself all the time, that is how you come to know him as a rock. When you're not humble, when you're not low, when you think you're high, aren't we actually always saying, I am the rock. I'm strong. And trusting in God's strength means he is God and I am not. He's in charge and I am not. God is strong enough for me to trust him whatever I'm going through. That takes humility. Just listen to Tim Keller again. I think this is one of the most remarkable insights I've come across in a long time. We talked about this at our house group as well. See what you think of this. This is what Tim Keller says. If we knew what God knew, we would ask him for exactly what he has given. If we knew what God knew, we would ask him for exactly what he has given us. How much time do we spend asking God to change the circumstances of our lives, but he has given them to us? Keller says, if we knew what God knew, we would see that what God has given us is the very thing we would ask him for. Well, hang on a minute. This difficulty, this particular affliction, no, that can't be right. Isaiah says, is God for you an eternal rock? Is he strong enough and wise enough and good enough? Does he know enough about things that we don't know to know that in every situation and circumstance of life, he is good? Trust him in your pain. Trust him in your sorrow. Trust him in your perplexity. Trust him in your joy and happiness. Now, when we trust in God's strength, that's the longest point, we trust in God's strength, three other things happen. And I think all of these flow from trusting in God. Here's the second one. We walk in God's ways. When we trust his strength, we walk in his ways. City life is life on a rock, but not standing still. It's living, walking in a certain way. Just look how life is described here. Verse 7, the path of the righteous is level, the way of the righteous, walking in your laws. You see, the song of the city, God's city, is that life is a journey. We're always moving towards the city. We're always traveling. And we're always moving through life, either in the city of the world, so that it becomes our focal endpoint destination, or we're moving through this world to the heavenly city. We're moving through life already with one foot in that city. Isaiah says that city life in God's city means that his ways need to become our ways. There's no point starting that in heaven. All of a sudden, a radical shift of mindset and lifestyle. Isaiah says it starts now, here. Your career, your relationships, your sexuality, your money, your home, your children, your retirement, your holidays, your TV watching, your recreation, your church attending, your whole of life, everything. So that there is not one bit of us unconnected and off limits to Christ and to his word. See what verse 8 says? We walk in the way of your laws. A constant attention to who God is and what he said and what that means for every area of our lives. Trust in the Lord is not a recreational indoor sport for Sunday mornings. It's something that affects all of life. Trickles down to how you use your checkbook, how you understand your tears. And we cannot trust in God's strength. We cannot walk in God's ways unless, you see what Isaiah says, unless we love God's laws. One preacher has said this: you do not need to hate Jesus to waste your life. You only need to be okay with how you are. You do not need to hate Jesus to waste your life. You only need to be okay with who you are, with how you are. God's laws, aren't they God's way of saying to us, you are not okay as you are. I want to shape you and teach you and mold you. What parent ever says to their child all through life, you are okay as you are. You decide. You do it. You make up what's right and wrong. No, God says, my laws prune bits off you. They remove what's wrong. They grow what's right. They produce new fruit. I'm fine, thanks, Lord. The Bible is for other people. I think I've got things pretty much licked. Untaught people, new Christians need the Bible. And people who've made a mess of their lives and need a hand. No, we are not born wise. No one is born, you see verse 7, upright, blameless. That's who God is. No one is born automatically like that. No one is a walking storehouse of discretion and wisdom and understanding. God's laws are a way of God saying to us, I am prepared to say to you, I love you enough to say to you, you are not okay as you are. You are young. You need to develop and grow. God says the same to us. Wherever you are in your walk with me and your love for me, I love you so much that I am prepared to help you walk further with me and to move you further, changing and transforming you by my laws, my words, the Bible. Here's a question to get to the heart of this, about whether we walk according to God's laws. Do you merely agree with the Bible, or do you obey it? In other words, what do you do when the Bible contradicts what you think is true, or what you want to be true, or what you think might be better? Who do we go with? Who do you lean on? The rock of what God says, or yourself? If we only ever merely agree with the Bible, then what's happening in our minds is that our response to God and his word is not one of obedience, but merely coincidence. Our lives just happen to line up with what God says. But when we trust in the Lord entirely, completely, his laws set the tracks of our lives. We never want to leave them or deviate from them. We trust in God's strength. We love God's laws. And thirdly, we wait for God's coming. We wait for God's coming. Do you see this very clearly in verse 8? After walking in the way of your laws, we wait for you. And the reason we wait is because the world does not yet see who God is or love his laws. Now, if you look at verse 10, you'll see God has three ways of showing himself to the world. You see how God displays himself to the world, verse 10? He shows himself by giving his grace on young and old, rich and poor, believer and unbeliever. He sends the same sun and rain on all. Secondly, he shows himself by giving, in many places of the world, he gives a land of uprightness, good government, respect for law, civil liberties. And thirdly, he shows his judgment. He shows himself in his judgments on the earth. Verse 9, when your judgments come upon the earth, the people of the world see who you are. God is always, always showing himself to the world. His grace, the nations in which we live, and even his judgments display himself. He is constantly speaking. And yet, Isaiah says here, the world does not see or know or care or listen as he speaks. Verse 11, your hand is lifted high. He's showing himself, but they do not see it. Do you remember Jesus in Luke's gospel? There's a local tragedy, a disaster. A tower falls, the Tower of Siloam falls. 18 people are killed. And Jesus explains to the suffering, hurting people, do you know those 18 people who died? It is not because they were more guilty than anybody else. God's not picking them out especially as worse than anybody else. But, Jesus says, the death of those 18 shows, reveals that judgment is coming. Death is always the judgment of the curse. It is always a sign. God has drawn a line in the sand. Rebellious men and women cannot live forever inside his city. And yet, as God shows himself like this all around us, people neither see nor care. Where is God when a plane goes missing or buildings fall to the ground, people ask. But do we ever stop to ask, where was God this morning as we drove here safely, as hundreds, thousands of flights land safely? He is constantly showing himself to us. Isaiah says, one day that will become crystal clear. God is coming. He's coming. And when he comes, we will not only wait for him. Did you catch that incredible image at the end of the chapter? We will not only wait for him, we, his people, will hide from him as he comes in judgment. Look at verse 20. Go, my people, enter your rooms, shut the doors behind you, hide yourselves for a little while until his wrath has passed by. The Lord is coming out of his dwelling to punish the people of the earth for their sins. We are waiting for a day when God will come and put everything right. And so here's the final thing that we do. Because we trust in God's strength, because we walk in his ways, and because we're waiting for his coming, number four, we honor his name. We honor his name. Look at verse 13. Do you know, I think this is the hardest one for us this morning. We might think it's easy, of course, to honor God's name. It's what we've done in our service, isn't it? Singing, praying, speaking to the children. But look at the context. O Lord our God, verse 13, other lords besides you have ruled over us, but your name alone do we honor. God's people here are remembering a time when a Pharaoh ruled over them in Egypt, or a Nebuchadnezzar crushed them in Babylon. They're remembering a time when God disciplined them. You see verse 16, it was being sent out of the land was like the agony of labor, of childbirth. We were in pain, but there was no life at the end of it, no child. And yet, do you see what he's saying? In the midst of all that pain, we honored you. We honored you. Other lords ruled over us, but you were our God, and now those rulers are gone, dead and buried. Verse 14. But your people, your dead, verse 19, will rise again and be with you in this city forever. Friends, while we trust a God like this, and while we walk with a God like this, and while we wait for a God like this, sometimes God's people will suffer very, very much. Other lords besides him will rule over us. But life in the city means honoring his name, come what may. Think of the Soviet Union, and China, Romania, churches closed, pastors imprisoned, believers forced underground to meet in secret for decades. People losing all they had by way of church buildings and possessions. Look at us. We have a hotel. Still, God's people kept honoring his name. 33 Christians today in North Korea face execution for helping a missionary from South Korea. A homeless shelter in Belarus has been stripped of its legal status because of its Christian beliefs. Far rather leave people out in the cold, unfed, unsheltered, than allow Christian civil liberties. A Christian prisoner has just been released after 6 months in prison in Iran. Your name alone do we honor. In the midst of that, Isaiah says to us, this is life in the city of salvation, life in the strong city, the protected city, the true granite city, because it is not the end of the story. Verse 19 is the end of the story. Your dead will live. Their bodies will rise. You who dwell in the dust, wake up and shout for joy. One day the earth will give birth to her dead, God's people. And until we get there, until that comes, trust, walk, wait, honor. Amen.